Metro FM. It's where you want to be.
Where you want to be with the Urban Jazz Experience. And I hope you heard that reminder that submissions are now open if you want to enter your project for the Metro FM Music Awards. You better submit now. Just go to the Metro FM website. It is the Urban Jazz Experience with me, Notemba. And our guest today is Simon Muller, Grammy Award winning arranger, composer, producer, and who's certainly distinguished himself as one of the leading voices of his generation when it comes to the vibraphone. And actually won an award for a song that he arranged for another award-winning jazz musician, Terry Lynn Carrington, for her album, the New Standards. And he won a Grammy for that. Well, we got to chat to him on the Urban Jazz Experience and chat about his latest album and what he's been up to. And it is the Grammy Awards tonight, by the way. I'll update you as the results keep coming in. So, Simon Muller chatting to us, and it is a conversation we have pre-recorded. But first, let's hear from his album. This is a track called The Song Is You. And it is coming out of the album called Countdown. Urban Jazz Experience, and thank you for taking the time to speak to us here on the show, as we have loved your music for quite a while and have played it on this show as obviously one of the leading vibraphonists, or should I say of this era. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for reaching out. I'm very happy to be a part of this. I like I said in my text, I'm sorry if I sound a little lower than usual. I have a little bit of
I know.
Cold, but
it's
you know, it's New York in the winter, so.
And it's early in the morning.
Yeah, something like that. But I'm very happy to be talking to you guys. Thank you so much for having me.
No, fabulous, man. And you've come out with some amazing albums, of course, including your latest one, which I did ask you which track should I play, but you had your own ideas. I had my own. So,
yeah.
which is great, because the love has been spread, you know, of the album. But tell me about this latest project, because you came out of, you know, being a Grammy Award winner for, you know, arranging Terry Lynn Carrington's New Standards Volume 1. And did that then have pressure on you as to what you should do for your album? or was that done already?
No, that had been done a long time ago. Funny enough, this is because, you know, sometimes albums, they take a long time to develop and to come to the time where it comes out, actually. So I think whether it's Terry's album, which I arranged, like, that tune, like, maybe, I don't know, 3 years ago or something like that. It takes a long time for things to come out. But basically, I like to see making an album kind of like as an iceberg. People see just the tip of the iceberg, but underneath there's a lot of things that went on before that people usually have no idea of.
Yes, including the conditions under which the music was made, you know, all those details we never get to really know. We just end up with the outcome, and which we then fall in love with. But there's definitely a lot of stories behind the making of that music. Yeah, but before we even get to Caroline Carrington, let's talk about Inception, because in any case,
this was
recorded in 2022, and you're right, it came out before that. You released four albums, and Inception, in your view, has been how different from the previous ones?
So Inception is part of a two series album, which is which was recorded by our trio, which we have with Luca Alemano and Jungkook Kim.
Mm-hmm.
It's a trio where we mostly play standards, because it was kind of the concept of that trio at the beginning, at least when we started playing together.
Mm-hmm.
So the first record is called Countdown, and it came out during the 2021,
the year before,
after the pandemic. And then Inception was just a logical following up of that, because as a trio, we used to play the repertoire of Countdown, like with the 8 or 9 to 10 songs we had on there.
Mm.
And then we started developing interest in other songs too. And I arranged a bunch of other standards too, which I wanted to record at some point. So Inception was kind of always on our mind, and we wanted to, it was like a logical suite of it. But the main things that I've been focusing on in the last 2 years, I would say, is the quartet, which is original music. It's like mostly compositions.
Yeah.
And for me, it's the side of my musicianship at the moment that I'm trying to develop more.
Which brought out Isla, the album Isla.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. That's why I decided to send you also two tracks from Isla, just in case you were interested, because I like to showcase that side also, because people are naturally more attracted to standards because they know it.
Mm.
But I think it's nice to bring something different to the table also, if I can.
And then for you, the playing with the quartet, changing to that instead of the trio, how significant and how important was it? And did it mean a lot to you? Is it something you've always wanted to do?
Yeah, I think it's really nice, because the quartet has a piano, so it's like a complete different sound, and it just changes the entire sound of the band. And my approach also as a melodic player and front line. So I had to, and it's just a very nice feeling to just build different soundscapes, whether it's in with four people or with three people. I think there's just magic in both. And I mean, I'm sure any lineup also, like quintet, sextet, I haven't experienced much, but quartet is just a lot of fun at this point, because I get to play compositions and I get to just experiment with that. And it's very challenging, but it's really fun when it works.
yeah. And of course, having Kim in there obviously is quite important to you, because I think from the sound of the album, the presence of Kim is just felt throughout.
Exactly. Well, we go back to like 2011 or something. We've been friends for a long time.
Okay. No, great stuff. And talking about going back, you know, why is it that vibraphone is always start up as drummers? You know, sometimes I associate a vibraphone with a piano sound. But well, it's always the
sometimes
drums.
Sometimes pianists actually play a switch to vibraphone. This happens.
Mm.
But I think it's the best instrument to start with in general, especially when you play jazz. Drums is like the king instrument in my view. And I think it's really, it gives you such a foundation after when you play jazz to just know how to play drums. And I wouldn't change a thing if I had to go back in time
and do that. Yeah. And this started very early in your age-wise for you. You know, the drumming and then switching to the vibraphone.
Yeah, I started playing drums when I was like 7 or something. So I was a lucky kid because my parents were. They were like tolerant enough, and they let me make some noise.
Mom's pots and pans.
Oh my God! Yeah. They were really nice with me.
It's the music of Simon Muller at the Urban Jazz Experience. Music taken off his album called Inception. This is a track called Perfrancing. He's from France, I guess. That's why he would come up with titles of this nature. Conversation with him that we pre-recorded. And it continued as he told us about his life when he was young and the kind of music that he grew up listening to. You grew up in France as well. I mean, what music were you listening to at home that, you know, led you to jazz?
I grew up in the west of France in a part called Brittany.
Mm-hmm.
I think I grew up mostly on, like, I don't know, a lot of different kinds of music, but my mom was playing a lot of music in the house constantly, which was really nice because I was always surrounded by it. But there was a lot of blues, a lot of jazz, a lot of classical music, but also, you know, like some funk, some things like that too, that really and, like, you know, singers, a lot of singers, whether it's James Brown, Billie Holiday, Frank Sinatra, you know, like Earth, Wind & Fire. A lot of amazing things. Prince, you know.
Yeah, so quite a variety and a wide range of musical influence. But I mean, but switching to the vibraphone, this is much later when you were, you know, a teenager, I think. And this is when you were in the U.S., what was it about the vibraphone that said, that is the instrument I was born to play?
Oh my God. Trust me, I have never told myself this. I still don't tell myself this.
You should.
But thank you. I so, like I said, I was a drummer. Then I really wanted to play melodies and play, you know, play like improvise and things like that. And I actually rented a saxophone. My dad helped me to rent a saxophone for a month when I was 14 or something. I really wanted to try it because I was the biggest fan of Cannonball Adderley and Charlie Parker and like the swiftness of saxophone was like mesmerizing to me, like how fluid they were in their language, and it was it was amazing.
Yeah.
And then so I really wanted to try that, but then it was like so much, I had to relearn everything from scratch, like scales, technique, everything. Whereas the percussion, I had already some techniques in like marimba, vibraphone, xylophone, you know, snare drum, drums, timpani, because I was studying classical percussion, which is an important factor. I was studying classical percussion as a kid since I was 7. And percussion is amazing because it's a family of instrument that groups a lot of instruments. You have so many different kinds of instruments. So as a classical percussion student, you're naturally led to study a lot of them, you know.
Yeah.
So that the teachers were like giving us the introductions to a lot of instrument and having us practice a lot of instrument, which means that I had already some sort of technical background on the mallet instruments, which you know, were the vibraphone, marimba, xylophone, like I said earlier.
Yeah.
So I didn't really keep the saxophone. I had it for a month and a half, and then I gave up because I was like, man, this is going to be too much work.
Yeah.
And so I just naturally started going to the closest one I could, which was the vibraphone, because also vibraphone was kind of used in jazz. I heard it on some records. I wasn't a big fan of it. I wasn't listening to it at home like all day, for sure. Like I told you, I was obsessed with Coltrane, Cannonball, you know, Freddie Hubbard. That was the things I was obsessed with in terms of who to listen to. I was like, this is amazing, you know.
Well, despite starting classical music, yeah, this is where your musical ear was taking you.
Oh, when I heard Kenny Garrett for the first time, that changed my entire life. I was like, wow, Kenny Garrett. This was huge. And also I remember hearing like even some more like modern players like Chris Potter. All these people that I first heard when I was a teenager, I was like, wow, this is incredible.
Which you get to play with these days? I mean, how's that?
You mean
some of the musicians that you were admiring and looking, you know, and listening to
more and more. Yeah. Especially just not just only playing with them, but also just getting to know them more personal level is really nice. Cause it's a very humbling experience. Because you understand, wow, these people are so good at what they do, or like I admire them for this and this and this, but they're also very down to earth and they're just like human beings first before being musicians. I think that's a very important thing. I think in general, like, because it's easy when you're into music to just like close yourself into this like little box of like, oh, this is what I do, this is what I do, this is what I do. And then outside, there's the outside world with a lot of important things to also care about. So that's why it's a good experience to be in New York and getting to meet, you know, all these people.
All these people. Yeah, that's Simon Moliere. In fact, as it's pronounced in French, vibraphonist who we're in conversation with here on the Urban Jazz Experience. A man who's been mentored by the likes of Quincy Jones, Herbie Hancock, Wayne Shorter, Jimmy Heath. And this was when he was at the Thelonious Monk Institute and Darren Barrett of the Berklee College of Music as well, and has worked with so many other musicians. We're chatting to him here on the Urban Jazz Experience and getting a taste of his music as well. More of it after this.
Shoo! What a time to be alive!
Oh, wow! Someone is in a super jubilant mood. Gamba ni!
Well, all 52 matches of the Africa Cup of Nations Cote d'Ivoire 2023 are available on SABC Plus and SABCSport.com, with live updates on SABC Sport Facebook and X from 13 January to 11 February 2024.
Don't be left behind. It is never too late to download the SABC Plus app and visit SABCSport.com.
Access the games everywhere you are, from your mobile phone, laptop, or any compatible device.
AFCON matches are live on SABC 1, S3, and SABC radio stations. Brought to you by SABC Sport.
For the love of the game.
Cheers to 2024 with summer savings on deals like 750ml Gordon's Gin, all variants for just $159.99 each. Celebrate an endless summer only at Checkers Liquor Shop. Valid until 8 February, not for persons under the age of 18. Drink responsibly.
MasterChef, the biggest, most loved culinary TV show on the planet, is coming to the SABC. This fresh local version of MasterChef South Africa will cook up a storm on S3 for the first time in 2024. Details on how to enter are coming soon. In the meantime, start prepping for the opportunity to win R1 million and the prestigious title of Mzansi's new MasterChef. Follow S3 across all of our digital platforms for more information. Channel your best entertainment only on S3.
Metro FM, it's where you want to be.
Don't you just love the sound of this instrument? I do. And especially on this particular track, Simon Moliere, playing it as a solo project, playing it, you know, just a solo vibraphone. Lush Life also taken off his album Inception. And of course, we continue the conversation with him. Let's talk about Terry Lynn Carrington, because she's a drummer, and so were you. And and arranging her album, which is absolutely fantastic. Was it a daunting task, or was it, you know, a joy to do? Was it also because of the relationships that you had that made it a fun project? What was that for you? And the fact that you won a Grammy for the work you did on her album.
So just to clarify, I only arranged one track.
Oh, is that okay? That's still just something.
Just so you don't get the wrong idea.
That's still something.
Some friends of mine actually arranged the rest of the album, which is beautiful. I couldn't agree more. It's a beautiful project, and so when she approached me for this, so Terry and I go back since Berkeley, because I was a student there.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the person in my life, I think, that has helped me the most for so many things, whether it's like music, you know, schools, immigration service in the U.S. You know, like all the, we all like need some like recommendation letters at some point, and she's, but even just more than that, she's just like always so generous with, you know, with her person, and she's just always helping people out in general. And it's very inspiring. She's a force of nature, you know, for sure. And you know, I think we'll be working together. I'm hoping for a lot more times.
I'm sure.
She approached me in 2021. It was in 2021, the summer of 2021, and I was on my way back to the U.S. after 1 year of pause for the pandemic. I went back to France for 1 year.
Okay.
Because New York was so dead. So after 1 year in France, the process for a European to go back to New York or the U.S. in general was very difficult, because the U.S. had a rule of like, we have to spend 17 days.
Yeah, I remember those stressful times for travelers.
And I had to spend 17 days outside of Europe and outside of the U.S. before entering the U.S. So we had to choose a destination. It could be like Canada, Dominican Republic, Mexico, Colombia. You name it. Anything but not Europe and not U.S. Because the Americans were convinced that the European COVID was like really something to, you know, watch out for.
Yeah.
I'm sure they had some truth in it, but it was just a very weird process. And for a lot of us musicians that live in New York and that are also European or Asians, actually, I remember, like, I had to meet like friends that lived either in South Korea or Japan, and, you know, and we're all like talking like, okay, so where are you gonna go for those 17 days, you know? And either way, long story short, just that to say that I was in Mexico for 17 days. And I was just literally on a fourth vacation, because I couldn't have my instrument there, and I had to go there because it was my only way back in the country. And then Terry gave me a call, and talked to me about the song. So I was like really, you know, excited about it, but I also, like, in my own head, I didn't tell her that, but in my head I was like, wow, I'm not home. I don't have my my keyboard or like anything. So I just had my computer with me. So I went to a store, and I was staying in an Airbnb, and I went to a store, like a music store, and I bought a small MIDI keyboard, and I made the arrangement from my Airbnb room.
Wow. Oh,
on my bed. and I sent, you know, she likes, I mean, she works like pretty fast in general. So I wanted to give her the end results, or like the arrangement, as quick as I could. So I think it was like a turnout of like 48 hours or something like that. just because I wanted to give her back the thing as quick as possible.
Okay.
And so it was, I think we made a few like revisions to it, but that was pretty much it. And then I didn't hear. So she said, thank you, you know. And then after, I didn't hear from her and from that project for like at least 8 months or something, almost a year. And then a year later, it came out. And I was like, wow, I'm really happy that ended up on the record.
On the project, yeah. Well,
yeah, it ended up being the first track too. So I was very excited when I first saw that it was out, you know.
Mm-hmm. And well, beautifully done as well. Absolutely.
Thank you. Also, it featured heroes. So Nick Payton, Elena. Yeah.
The music of Simon Moulier on the Urban Jazz Experience, vibraphonist and an award-winning arranger. No, this is not the song that he arranged for Terry Lynn Carrington. He didn't play on it, he just arranged it. But anyway, this is taken off his album, also his late project called Isla. It's a track called Empress of the Sea. And I have been in conversation with him, talking about his music. And this is how we started wrapping up the conversation, as we also get to taste the sound of the vibraphone, according to this young man, and also the projects that he's been doing. He also chats to us about the music that I've been playing. look, 4 albums later, what are you still discovering, or what are you still wanting to venture into musically?
Well, in terms of music, I'm like I said earlier, I'm really excited to be writing at the moment. So I'm trying to develop the compositional palette of the music I'm writing, and I'm working on a 5th album right now,
mm-hmm.
With the quartet as well, and I have a lot of things at the moment in store, but not sure if I can share all of them. But definitely very soon I'm planning to release some new music.
Lovely stuff. Yeah. I mean, a lot of musicians, especially jazz musicians, try to pay tribute to those who have come before them. Not necessarily maybe doing the music, but just honoring their style. Sometimes I'm thinking here, other vibraphonists, the Milt Jacksons or Lionel Hampton, or maybe Bobby Hutcherson or something. For you, who are those that have laid the foundation for you to be where you are today?
Well, those people that you just mentioned are definitely part of it.
Mm.
Bobby Hutcherson, Milt Jackson, Lionel Hampton, even like guys like that are still around, like Steve Nelson. He's been a mentor of mine. Ed Sandin, who was a former mentor of mine in Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Gary Burton. I never met him, but we've been exchanging a few emails over the past years, and then all the players from today, Warren Wolf, Joel Ross, Sasha, Juan Diego Villalobos, Joe Locke. There's so many more. There's a lot of players. I'm blanking right now, but just because it's early in the morning. All these players are an inspiration, and I'm very very thrilled to be playing the instrument in this era, because it's in really good company.
Yeah, and what excites some of us is the fact that the vibraphone was not necessarily a pursued instrument in jazz, and right now it's it's booming with so many of you guys and talent. On this instrument, making the sound of jazz even more fuller and more colorful, and just a pleasure to listen to. Absolutely. Okay, now some of the tracks you tend to also just put your voice in there and vocalize you're playing, which adds and beautiful colors into the music. So are you wannabe vocalist at some point,
in that way?
Maybe you just fine, feeling the vibraphones and just expressing it in whatever sounds come out.
No, so it's definitely not something that I've wanted that I've planned or practiced. Very not so. I like to believe that when you're improvising, there's a direct connection with the inner voice, which is basically things you hear and things that you can sing in your soul, I think, so when you have a saxophone player, a trumpet player, any horn player or a singer, they have an amazing thing for them going, is that they have a direct connection with the air, with the quality of the air. So the air comes from deep within your body, so it's like, this adds a level of a level of depth, I think, to me.
Yeah, depth and an intimacy with and connection with that your instrument. Yeah.
Very, very much so. You said all the right words. Thank you so much for helping me. But yeah, this is what it is. Mm. And I think the singing comes from there, because I think we have to be able to hear what we want to play.
Mm.
And I think this, I mean, like I said, I don't really control it. And I used to want to stop it. And especially during recordings, I used to get down on myself and be like, oh, I wish I could find a way to stop this. And then now I just accept it. But yeah, it's just like,
we're so glad you haven't stopped. That. You didn't stop it, because it sounds amazing when it happens, and we really enjoy it. Absolutely. Listen, we have to wrap it up. I do want to thank you, and maybe you have something you want to say about the particular tracks that you've chosen for me to play.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep. I'll make it short. Yeah, the first one I sent you was "Lush Life," because it's a solo track.
Yes.
To be fair, recording a solo track was really, really challenging, because you're alone. and I've always loved, listening to people like Art Tatum or Thelonious Monk.
Yeah.
So that's what I was trying to emulate.
Did you need to be in a special kind of mode to be able to do a solo?
Well, to be honest, I was recording at home.
Mm.
So that really, this was recorded at home. So you might even hear some ambulance or things like that. The other track is called Prancing. Prancing is a blues written by Miles Davis.
Mm.
I love that this track a lot, because it was same, like, the F blues in jazz is like a very well known kind of road that everybody has to take at some point, and so F blues is a really good meeting point for all musicians,
Yeah.
And so with the trio, we really wanted to have that on a record, because I think it's also not a lot of people do it anymore. Just like recording a normal F blues, no changing the meter or
mm-hmm.
Four F blues.
and just letting things flow as naturally as possible. Mm.
Yeah. And a lot of fun also, especially when you're doing it with friends and people you've been playing for a long time. It's just a lot of fun. So we just wanted to have that on record, and that's why I sent you that. And then the two I sent you from my original composition record, which is called Isla.
Yeah.
Which was recorded with a quartet. That's Empress of the Sea, which is the first track on the album. This is one of my favorite tracks on the record.
Mm.
And the other one is called Enchantment. And same here. I just love the difference in the grooves in those two tracks. Like I said earlier in our interview, I'm very groove oriented kind of composer. Since I grew up as a drummer and percussionist, it's one of the main elements in my compositional style. So these two compositions have different grooves and melodies that I enjoy too. So I hope you enjoy them too.
Definitely. And I mean, I see the groove in when you play. I watch some of your videos as well. So I see the groove in there as well. Listen, Simon, what a pleasure talking to you. And thank you so much for sharing all this with us and my listeners here on the Urban Jazz Experience. And we hope you can come to South Africa and perform soon.
I can't wait. My pianist, Lex Corton, has been there a couple of times, and he's been only talking amazing things about it. So I can't wait to go there for sure.
And he's not lying. He's not lying. Simon, thank you so much, and all the best. And thank you for the music.
Yeah. Thank you. Have a great one.
You too.